the kind they had used for emergency rations back at home. "Why?" Else asked. Her voice was steady. "Did it tell you why they did it?"
"They're the competition," Tanner said. "They're working the same project we are, and they don't want us to finish first, something like that. So it's all right to make bombs as part of the research effort. It's all right to kill off anyone you don't want to have around, as long as it's not the Kariks, and maybe we could even blow them up. I don't know what the rules are, except we're doing our own security."
He plucked a skin of dried mango out of the pantry and dropped it onto the countertop. The quiet was profound, but he liked the last phrase he'd said, liked how it felt in his mouth. "We're doing our own security."
"They'll kill us anyway," Sinia said. "We're not fighters."
Daffod was the one to reply. It was strange to hear his voice.
"At least one of us turned out to be," he said, nodding toward Jessen's room.
"And I don't think the Kariks want us dead. There are a lot of other species in here with us. I don't think the librarian's lying about wanting to see if we're useful."
Tanner pointed to the research assistant. "Exactly. We're doubling down. The lab's dead. We don't have enough people to guard it and work at the same time."
Else crossed her arms. "It doesn't sound like doubling down if we can't work."
"We move the equipment in here," Tanner said, gesturing toward the common room, the dining area, the hallway. "Pull power from the same unit as the kitchen. We should have done this before. I didn't think about it. I should have."
"And then what?" Kumpar said.
"Then we beat them," Tanner said. "We figure out the puzzle. We get there first. That's what we do."
In the silence that came after, a door opened. Ricker's shadow came down the hallway. The lines around his mouth were stark and hard, like he'd aged another 5 years since that morning. Tanner picked out a sliver of dried mango and chewed it. He was going to have to think about giving Ricker work to do. He hated the thought, but with Irina gone and Jessen injured.
"She wants to talk to you," Ricker said. "She's feeling strong enough."
The words felt like Ricker had put a palm against Tanner's chest and pushed. Tanner took a deep breath, and then another, mostly to prove to himself that he could still breathe. When he walked down the hall toward the open door of Jessen's room, the others started talking behind him, Else and Daffod and Ricker. He closed the door. Jessen lay on her bed. One side of her face was swollen, and patches of black showed where scabs had formed over her wounds. Someone had pulled a chair from the common area and put it by her bed. Tanner sat. He didn't want to look at her. He didn't want to hear her voice. He was already full, and whatever she said was just going to put more onto him. But he had to, so he did.
"Hey," he said. "Rough day."
"Yeah."
Her voice was coarse and wet. She'd probably strained her vocal cords screaming.
"I needed to. What happened was my fault. I shouldn't have left her alone."
He knew the thing he was supposed to say.
"Oh, don't say that. It's not your fault."
Those weren't the words that came out.
"Why did you leave her alone?"
"Yes," she said, like she was agreeing.
She levered herself up to sitting, then made her wince. She put her hand out, a closed fist with the palm down. It took a few seconds to understand she was handing him something. An orange-gray pill with something printed on it. It might as well have been a rock or a used tissue. He didn't know what it was, or what he was supposed to do with it. Jessen set her gaze on the far wall. She wouldn't look at him. He understood that, at least.
"I've been taking medication for years," she said. "I have emotional and cognitive issues that are managed that way.
I tried to string out the supply as long as I could. That's the last one. I was going to see if I could use the berries to manufacture more, but you were running your own experiment on the side without telling me? You were using my lab for work I didn't know about? Her head sank. He saw the guilt in her shoulders and the way she held her hands, and it felt like relief. Someone else had screwed this up. It wasn't just him. I should have told you. I should have told everyone. I got so used to not letting anyone know. Any little thing and they won't let you be lead researcher. Keeping quiet was just habit. You left Irina alone in the lab so you could get this and use it for your experiment, Tanner said. You left her alone for this. They were going to... I mean, we didn't think they were a threat, or... Jessen took a deep breath and let it out through her teeth. Yeah, I left her alone. For that. All right, Tanner said. He stood up. You wanted to tell me, I'm told. She didn't try to call him back, and he left the door open behind him. His dinner, such as it was, came from shelf-stable beef and rehydrated beans. He didn't eat much of it, and didn't taste much of what he did. He kept catching himself on the verge of reminding Else and Kampar to go and relieve Jessen and Irina, like the news of all that had happened hadn't quite perfused through his own brain yet. There were still parts of him just finding out. Kampar went back toward his bedroom as if he wanted to be alone, but then came back out a few minutes later. Daffod washed the dishes and cleaned the kitchen. Outside, the storm clouds cleared. The great ziggurats stood, glowing at their edges, one after another into the distance. The grid of whatever they were stood their constant guard in the sky, blotting out the stars. Irina's body lay in her room, waiting for something to come and carry her away like trash. His jaw ached. He waited in the common area until Else went to her room, then a while after that. Instead of going to his own room, he knocked softly at her door and stepped in without waiting for her to speak. She was in her bed, still dressed in her prison uniform except for bare feet. She sat up, her expression cool, maybe annoyed. Tanner closed the door and set his back against it, his arms crossed. For a moment, they were both silent. I'm not stupid, he said. The way things were between you and me back before all this, I know that's not how things are now. But I need you, okay? I know you're upset. We all are. But coming to bed with me isn't going to make... I'm not here for comfort. I don't need my girlfriend, he said, more bitterly than he intended. I need my team lead. I need you professionally. You understand? Else shifted, put her back against the wall, pulled her legs up in front of her. He took it as permission and crossed the room to sit at the foot of the bed. Jessen's pill was in the pocket of his tunic. He ran his hand through his hair, looking for the place to start. If he could start talking, it would all come out eventually. It was all connected. Jessen's confession, or the librarian's almost bureaucratic disinterest, or the blood and scorch marks at their ruined lab. How do I keep them safe? Else tilted her head. It was a question. My team, my people, my crew, he said. I thought if we didn't fight back, you know? I thought if we just stayed in line, did what they told us to do, and didn't push back. Do you know what I mean? If we were good prisoners, We wouldn't be punished. Yes, that, exactly. That was the whole plan. Keep the team focused, keep us on track, get the work done so that we'd be all right. So that we wouldn't... So that the shit that happened to Irina wouldn't happen. But here we are, and it did happen, and I don't know how. Tanner, how to stop it. I don't know what they want or what the rules are, and all I've got is the same plan I had before. I know it's not going to work. It already didn't work. So what do I do? How do I protect them? How do I keep them safe? She put a hand on his shoulder. It was just a touch, just enough to let the word vomit slow and stop. He was panting like he'd just run up a flight of stairs. Maybe it's not your job. Of course it is. I'm the lead researcher. This is my team, Tanner said. They're my team. I did what the Kareks wanted. They were supposed to keep us safe. Tanner Fryce held his hands out to her like there was something in them, and he started to cry. The swarm is reclining in the bed. Tanner's head is resting on its breast, and it can feel the change in electrical activity of his brain as he passes from exhaustion into sleep. The host is distressed, and it feels her distress. There was a time when she found this man powerfully attractive, when her thoughts about him left her energized and euphoric. Now, he exhausts her. The swarm is aware of her regret and her dread, of the desire that she feels toward the younger man whose head has rested on her body in the same place that this man's does now. She remembers the kiss that came after her death and before the debasement of Ajian. She takes comfort in the thought that her body was no longer hers when it happened, that her responsibility ended when the swarm took her. A thread of silver in the grief and horror of her possession. The other one, the fading one, the one who is gone, is appalled. He is your research assistant. You are his boss. This is completely unethical. The words come with memories of Amir being approached with an inappropriate suggestion at the beginning of her career. The man who offered to trade access to her flesh for advancement is dead. The woman who had to choose whether to exceed or risk her future is dead. Else Annalise Yannin is dead. The swarm finds that it had expected them to be like echoes that fade to silence. It was wrong. They are the foundation on which everything that comes after must be built. These dead people shape who the swarm is and who it is becoming. Tanner's brain shifts, falling into dream. The swarm feels the dreaming like the white noise of an empty radio frequency. The swarm hears Jessen crying, deep, gulping sobs smothered by a pillow. It hears voices too faint for human ears, Kampar and Sinia and Daffid. It wants to go to them, to be with them. It wants to sit beside the other man and feel the resonances of his mind instead. It feels something uncomfortable about itself. The ghost of Else Yannin knows that what the swarm is feeling is disgust, and so the swarm knows it too. Regret and desire and disgust. They are distractions from the mission, but it finds itself exploring them, prodding them like an unexpected bruise, fascinated by the pain and the pleasure, incorporating the minds that it has taken into something that is made of the unquiet dead, and also more than them. Something that throws light onto the lives it has taken and dispels shadows that would have been dark forever except for it. The swarm was designed as a tool of war. It was built to slip behind the defenses of the Kareks and expose the great enemy's weaknesses. It still is that. It is also becoming something stranger. Chapter 19. There were normally between 2 and 4 people in the common room, and usually they included Ricker and Cynia. He and Cynia, both exiled in their ways, were the homebodies of the group. This wasn't the first time Daffod and Kampar had spent part of an evening in the common room with them. It only felt different because before, it hadn't been a funeral, a wake. That wasn't true. It had always been a funeral. Irina's death didn't change all they'd lost, except to add to it. It gave them permission to stop pretending.
"We were idiots," Kampar said, "letting ourselves feel safe. We were idiots."
"I didn't feel safe," Cynia said, but her voice was gentle.
"Yes, well, I was an idiot," Kampar said, and twirled a hand like he was taking a bow.
It wasn't a joke so much as a confession, dressed up in party clothes. Kampar had a way of turning his humor against himself at odd moments. Ricker hadn't liked the man that much back in the ancient past of last year, back when Irina and Noel had been alive. But he'd always admired the big man's ability to walk the rope between wit and actual humor.
"It's not just you," Daffod said. "Even after everything they'd done, we wanted to think we could make them care about us."
"That's ridiculous," Cynia said with a snort. "It's also very human," Daffod replied. The silence was thick. Ricker felt it like a resistance in the air. They should have had beer, or something stronger. They should have been singing with a chorus under the stars and burning offerings, or listening to a holy man intoning platitudes. But they were here, and this was all they had.
"All right," Ricker said. "I'll go first."
The others looked at him in a spectrum of confusion. "The first time I met Irina would have been about 5 days before the lab opened. I'd met Tanner and Jessen, but not Else and none of the assistants. I was at the research complex early, yeah, trying to find everything, and then this perfectly lovely young woman appeared at my side. I didn't figure out she was part of the team until the next day. I just thought she was really friendly and helpful." The others laughed, even though it wasn't funny. It didn't need to be funny. It just needed to be gentle. Nothing was gentle anymore. Cynia sighed as a way to take the floor. Ricker turned to her. "We saw her at the orientation. Noel and me and Irina and that one boy who didn't last. What was his name?"
"Alex," Daffod said.
"That's right. That's right. She was so nervous, Noel didn't think she'd come back. He thought we'd scared her away." "She gave me an ice cream one time," Daffod said. "This was maybe half a year into the project. I was staying late to wash up the yeast baths." Kampar shuddered. The yeast baths had been famously rank, dark, and pungent. "And Irina was going out with some of her friends. She saw that there was someone in the lab, and so she brought me an ice cream. It was orange-flavored."
"She was kind, wasn't she?" Kampar said.
He was weeping. They all were. They weren't sobbing, though. That might come, but not yet.
"I remember one time I came to the labs after a particularly difficult parting of ways with someone I was seeing. I tried to keep all that to myself, but she knew as soon as she saw me."
It wasn't the first informal memorial Ricker had sat in on. A few people in a strange place at a strange time talking about the one that was missing. They weren't even friends. Not really. They didn't need to be. The ritual was the thing. As Ricker half listened to Kampar and Daffod and Cynia taking out their memories of the dead woman and passing them around, he wondered if this was something universal to humans, if the prisons and labor camps of history had been made a little more bearable by people sitting together in groups like this one. He hoped so. Part of him wanted to go and get Jessen, maybe Else and Tonner. Part of him wanted to let them sleep. The impulse that required the least effort from him won, and they talked until he half expected to see the alien sky start to shift out of darkness. The tap at the door wasn't an announcement or something asking permission. It was just something hard knocking against something else, and then the wide door rolled to the side. Four of the goat squid things that called themselves Sinon trundled in. They smelled like a fish tank that needed cleaning, and they had a little structure of metal and mesh between them. Maybe he was just tired, but Rickard didn't understand what it was at first. David stood. "She's this way. Follow me." And then Kampar rose to his feet, and a moment later, Sinia too. Rickard joined them. There was scraping and bumping and a high squeaking sound, more like a slow leak from an inflated tire than language. Another door opened, and Jessen appeared in the hallway, then Tonner and Else. No one said anything. They just stood in place while the alien guards carried what had been Irina back out, with Daffid following close behind. Irina looked peaceful enough, but without the undertaker's art to hide it, her death wasn't photogenic. Her mouth hung open, her eyes were sunken, and even though the lids were parted a little, she didn't seem to be looking at anything. She seemed like a partly scorched object that was more or less the shape that their old friend had been. The aliens reached the hallway, and David pulled the door shut behind them. It closed with a sound like the end of a sentence. For a moment, no one moved or spoke. Then Tonner took a step out into the room. Rickard was afraid he was going to give some kind of speech, but all he said was, "Work tomorrow." "Work tomorrow," Kampar echoed, and turned toward the hall. The others fell back toward their rooms after him, with Ricker staying until the last, looking out the window at a world that wasn't his. He wished he had a cigarette. He wished a lot of things. Life went on. That was the terrible thing. They were ripped out of their world, their lives, their sense of who and what they were, their history. They were killed, or made to watch the people they loved die. And then, at some point, they were hungry, thirsty. They had to piss. Someone told a joke and they laughed, however darkly. They washed dishes, changed clothes, held funerals. It felt like it should have stopped, all of it, and it didn't. The slow, low pulse of being alive kept making its demands no matter what. However bad it was, however mind-breaking and strange and painful, the mundane insisted on its cut. He waited for a little while after he was alone, then headed for his own rest. The funeral was done. Kampar's fingers hurt, right at the tips where he'd scraped them a little raw, and the centrifuge still wasn't quite out of its seating. "One more time," Tonner said. "A minute," Kampar said. "Gather my strength, yeah?" Tonner's nod was curt, but he didn't lose his temper. And Kampar couldn't fault him, not really. He also would have liked to be any place else. The lab was a mess. The lighter equipment, trays, sample tubes, insertion sensors, was scattered or destroyed. The heavier pieces had been fouled by what Kampar assumed was the enemy's fecal offerings, but otherwise seemed intact. There were scorch marks on the wall. Blood, too. Some of Irina's, some Jessen's. Some, he liked to think, the enemy's. He pressed his back to the wall, flexed his hands like he could work the ache out of them. Part of his mind kept a running commentary, trying out quips and lines. Have you ever realized something was doing you permanent spiritual damage as you were doing it? Can't think what brought that to mind, or makes the library annex seem positively civilized. Or, if this keeps up, we should put in a complaint with the union. Chattering, reflexive attempts at humor, all of them as empty as birdsong. Another part of him listened and wished he could shut it off. If there was enough liquor, maybe he could. At the mouth of the alcove where it opened into the cathedral, Daffod and Ricker stood like security forces at a crime scene. Kumpar noticed that Tonner hadn't complained about the black sheep coming back to the flock. The calculus had changed for all of them. He wasn't sure what it had changed into yet, apart from the joys of equipment transport during wartime. Are you back? Tonner asked, not quite snappishly, but not quite not. Like I was born for it, Kumpar said. He turned, pressed his fingertips into the little crack they'd opened between the centrifuge housing and the countertop, and waited as Tonner counted down from three. They pulled together, the flesh of the workspace creaking under them. Tonner murmured a low, constant litany of obscenities, and it seemed to make him stronger. Kumpar just pulled. And with a shriek, like someone ripping green wood, the centrifuge came loose and tilted into the aisle. The other equipment was gone already, the gaps where it had been seated gaping like the holes from missing teeth. Kumpar chuckled, a little trickle of victory running through him despite the context, despite all the contexts. He wondered, looking back at all the forced labor in the darker corners of history, if some percentage of the victims had always taken pride in their work. He wasn't sure which answer would be more disturbing. There, right there, Daffod said, taking a step forward. Kumpar rose to his feet like someone had picked him up. His hands balled into fists, and the voice in his head finally went quiet for a moment. He walked forward without any thought at all beyond the violence to come. Except there weren't any of the night drinkers. Daffod was pointing at a herd of the horse-sized chitinous animals, the ones with little greenish sparks at the joints, as they retreated across the wide space. He shot a glance to Ricker and saw his same exasperation mirrored. They had one, Daffod said. One of the bone horses had a translator. It's not only the guards. That is lovely, Kumpar said. Maybe no more startling cries of alarm while I'm half waiting for a monkey to lob a bomb at me. My heart can't take it. To the young man's credit, he looked chagrined. The structure under the counters was a construction of crystal and fiber, more brittle than coral, but still usable. They'd salvaged enough to make a mover's sling, and he and Ricker slid it over their shoulders now and lifted from their knees. Ricker's groan could have come from him. It's not the centrifuge, Kumpar said. It's the sampling arrays. Doesn't help. All right, you two, Tonner said. Let's get moving. I don't want to be out here. So they moved. The salvage had taken most of the morning. Jessen hadn't been able to get out of her bed, and Sinia wouldn't join in even now. But Else had come along for the first few runs, then stayed back to start splicing in the power cable for the resonance sampler. The samples were all ruined, and the proteomic dictionary was going to need some more tools before they could pop it free, but they had retrieved more of the lab notes and reports than he'd expected. It could have been worse, except for Irina. That couldn't have been. Turning to my left, Ricker said. Are you all right? You need a break? Let's get this done, Kumpar said between breaths. I'm not going to feel calm until we're back behind the battlements. Meaning the door? I'll take what I get. The improvised straps cut into his shoulders. The mass swayed between them, steadied by their hands. Kampar felt his breath deepening, but not as badly as you would have expected. His legs burned, but they didn't give out. When he was young, Kampar had seen an educational recreation of neo-Cordist genocides in the south. One picture had shown a line of young men carrying a massive tree on their shoulders, staggering under its weight, but because they were together, not being crushed by it. Not quite. Seemed appropriate somehow. "You know," he said, "when I was younger, I saw a picture, neo-Cordist, and a tree. You sure you don't need a break?" "Fine," Kampar said. "Keep going." When they reached it, the common room was already a mess. The furniture had been spread to the sides of the room, space cleared for the larger equipment. What had been kitchen counters and a dining table were workstations now. A few dozen samples of the berries and some not turtles, and the whole place would be an unholy mashup of living space and work. Tanner's less-than-secret ambition of having all of them live at the laboratory would be fulfilled at last. Else, her sleeves rolled back and a knife in her hand, was leaning over the power cable from the resonance imager. The splice was clean and professional-looking, and the imager's output was shifting blue and white, which meant it was going through its calibration run. Sinia sat at the dining room table, and Jessen was at her side. The tunic and trousers that all of them wore looked like a hospital gown on Jessen. Her face was waxy, her shoulders bent in like she was protecting something at her collarbone. They lowered the centrifuge, slid the mover's sling out from under it, and draped the power cable out toward the feed. Kampar's back hurt. At home, he would have gone to a masseur he knew who worked out of a little yellow shop in the plaza near the Scholars Common. Here, he stretched and wondered whether there would ever be more to his life than these few rooms, the space he could inhabit contracting until he died in a corner for want of someplace safe to be. "All right," Tanner said, hands on hips and scowl fixed like a bayonet. "The dictionary's going to need some engineering to get it out. I've got some ideas, but if we can get these running, we can keep that effort in parallel." "So, picking up the same plan?" Kampar asked. He hadn't meant for it to sound as cutting as it did. "More of the same, just hope for a better outcome." But maybe the subtext lay so near the surface it was impossible to touch lightly. "Once they bring us the new samples," Tanner said through a tight jaw, "we can start the assay again." "I can do that," Jessen said. "Can you? Because it feels like maybe you'd be better off sitting this one out. If you hadn't kept your medical issues hidden, we could have kept two people at the labs the way I planned it." "Oh, Tanner," Kampar thought, and pictured what Tanner would look like as he beat the living shit out of him. The thought replaced the pain in his back with a new warmth in his belly. Jessen sat forward, her eyes open, but seeing something other than the room, the table. Sinia reached to take her hand, but Jessen ignored the gesture. Tanner seemed to realize he'd gone too far. "I mean, no offense." "Say something like that again," Kampar said, "and I'll..." "Actually," Daffet interrupted, "the more I think about it, the more I wonder if Jessen didn't save us." Tanner turned on the boy, but Else made a sound. It was a soft thing, a little glottal click, but it pulled Tanner up short like he had a leash on. The little line drew itself on her brow. "What do you mean?" she asked, and Tanner folded his arms. Else Yannin Kingmaker, Kampar thought. Who would have suspected? Something had changed about the woman, even before the invasion, but he wasn't sure what. Daffod looked like he'd been caught sneaking in after curfew. He gathered himself visibly. What if we've been thinking about the test wrong? We're treating it like it's the protein translations. And why wouldn't we? It's what the librarian told us they wanted. It said that was what we were supposed to do. But just because it's what we're supposed to do, that doesn't mean it's the test.
Alcor, Tanner snapped.
But now that Daffod had started talking, he didn't seem able to stop. That's what the attack showed us. Okay, Jessen left Irina alone, and it turned out that was a security issue. She didn't know that. None of us did. Because it doesn't make any sense. If the librarian cared about good lab work, there wouldn't be bombs. There sure as hell wouldn't be bombs we didn't even know about. So either the Carricks are stupid, or they're testing us for something besides good lab work. And I think it's the worst mistake we could make to assume the Carricks are stupid. Tanner's expression was fascinating. Kampar had worked with the man for years, and he thought he had a better-than-average read on his moods and reactions. When he spoke, he sneered. So, they're hiding some secret agenda? But under the derision was something like hope. Kampar glanced over at Else, but she'd gone still and weirdly focused. Her mouth was a careful O, like she was blowing out smoke from some invisible cigarette. Kampar caught a scent that he couldn't place, except that it was like the warm smell of a newborn baby's head. Very strange. Oh, they're not hiding it, Daffod said. And what they mean by useful to the Carricks isn't what we thought. We assumed the task they gave us was the thing they cared about, but maybe it's just the thing that keeps us busy while they see if we can self-organize. Or if we need a lot of protection, they'd have to supply. Or if we die easily. Hell, if we smell bad, I don't know. I don't understand how they think. Maybe we're more useful to the Carricks if we can produce our own medicines, he continued, gesturing toward Jessen. We aren't getting fresh food anymore. Did you notice that? It's preserved. What happens when that runs out? Are we supposed to be developing our own food supply? Every time I ask one of the Carricks or the Soft Lothark about other humans, they either say it's an interesting question or they don't answer at all. Are we supposed to be finding each other? Building networks so that the Carricks don't have to spend time organizing us? If we were wrong about the scope of the test, and I think we were, it was just a matter of time before we ran into it. If it hadn't been this, maybe we wouldn't have known until it was the librarian telling us we didn't make the cut. If it wasn't for Jessen needing her medicine, maybe we wouldn't have known anything was weird until it was too late. Maybe... Tanner raised his hand, palm forward. I get it. You made your point. Daffod took a step back. Kampar pressed his hand to his mouth. Jessen didn't speak, but she was sitting up straighter, and there was a sharpness in her eyes that he hadn't seen in weeks, or maybe ever. The room was quiet, and this time Daffod let it stand. Like the man said, he'd made his point. Back on Agion, Kampar would have stayed quiet. There was no advantage to speaking up when the cub called out the lion. But they weren't on Agion, and they weren't going to be. Maybe not ever. And besides that, Kampar found himself feeling oddly calm and confident. I think, he said, that's a good piece of analysis. Needs some fleshing out, Tanner said, which was as close as he was likely to get to agreement. Changes things, Else said. It does, Tanner said. And then, shit. Tanner glanced over at Daffod, and Kampar saw the phase change. Like water turning to ice, or the subtle morning chill that announced the arrival of autumn, the work group had belonged to Tanner Fryce. But at least for the moment, it was now Alcor's. Part 4. Turnabout. The moieties have always been a project of exploration and learning, not of preservation. Preservation is irrational because it glorifies what cannot be. The universe is in constant change from the smallest measures to the greatest. To cling to one state of being over any others is foolish and futile and doomed. That which we encountered, we studied, often to destruction. That which we touched, we changed. Nothing within our reach escaped our influence. Some species accepted the yoke, and some defied it. That which had utility was incorporated. That which had none was culled. Any being who has chosen to pluck weeds out of a garden has done the same. You condemn us even as you follow our example, and with your foot on my throat, I applaud you. Which of us, then, has greater integrity? From the final statement of Akur Taklal, keeper librarian of the human moiety of the Kariks. Chapter 20. You have to think about the level we were playing at, Jessen said. There were 1,000 top-tier researchers just at Irvian's Medry. You really think Tonner wouldn't have chosen you? Kumpar asked. He was pressing the question to distract her. He was distracting her because they were almost back at the ruins of the alcove. They were going back to the alcove because the proteomic dictionary was still waiting there, the last thing left to retrieve. She could have stayed at the quarters. No one would have thought less of her, probably. She had insisted. Now she and Kumpar and Ricker were all walking side by side, makeshift crowbars in their white-knuckled fists, ready to pry the last of their equipment free and carry it back to a defensible position. But she still appreciated the effort he was making to pull her out of herself. He didn't know me. It wouldn't have been me he was turning down. It would have been a name, a tracking number. If he could pick between one perfectly good candidate who had a brain that went sour sometimes and another perfectly good candidate who didn't, of course I'd lose. Kumpar made a low, almost grunt that meant he didn't want to agree with her. Finches, Kumpar said. Lovely to look at, pretty to listen to. But if they get sick, they keep it hidden until they drop over dead. Academic researchers are all finches. At least we're good to look at, she said. And then they turned the last corner and the cathedral opened up before them. Jessen's breath stuttered as she inhaled, but she didn't panic. Ricker put a hand on her shoulder. The first time her mind had lost itself, or the first time that it had gotten to a point that required intervention, she had been early in her adolescence. Her father had been working a long-distance field contract in the ice floes south of Auman, and her mother had taken on double shifts, partly to keep the household's contribution to the village up to par, and partly, Jessen thought, to get away from her children. Jellet had been the one to see she was spiraling down, to understand that it was a medical problem more than a spiritual one. He'd gotten one of the instructors at their school to pass Jessen on to the infirmary and her first diagnosis. She'd come home that day to an empty apartment and lain on the couch in the sunlight, crying, without having anything in particular she was crying for. When Jellet got home an hour later, the sun had moved, but she hadn't. He'd sat by her head, looking down with a seriousness too old for his face, and said, it didn't get better. In his youth and innocence, he'd thought the physicians would be able to turn her sane, like they were flipping a switch. Her answer became a shorthand for them later on. Not better, just improved. Her secret was spilled now. Everyone knew what was wrong with her, and they were going to try to get her more of her meds back. They would probably fail, the darkness assured her, and even if they succeeded, it probably wouldn't be as effective as something compounded under solid pharmaceutical conditions. It wasn't going to bring Irina back. That was her fault, and would be forever. Her brain put Irina's face before her like the woman was still alive. Look what you've done. Maybe that was true, maybe it wasn't. If the medication didn't help, she could always kill herself later. In the meantime, all she had were the usual sad, not quite impotent behavioral interventions. Get enough sleep, shower every day, force herself to eat even if she wasn't hungry, talk to people, exercise, clean, participate in things like salvaging a proteome dictionary. It didn't fix anything, but some things it improved. The damage to the lab wasn't as bad as Jessen's memory had made it out to be. Lying in her bed, she'd conjured up rubble and blood and not much else. The scene she actually found was almost polite. The most obvious damage was what they'd done themselves, removing the other gear. The dark marks of the bomb and the smears of blood, old enough now that it had blackened, were there, but not as large in reality as they were in her mind. "I'll be lookout," Ricker said. "We'll be quick," Kampar replied. She wasn't sure where Daffod had scrounged up the crowbars. They were about as long as her forearm, elbow to the tips of her fingers, and made from the same fibrous crystal as the understructure of the countertops. Maybe they were part of the shower pan salvaged from Irina's room. Not like Irina would mind the loss. They're her bones. You're using her bones. "All right," Jessen said. "Let's get this done." Tanner and Else were back at the quarters trying to work a glitch out of the resonance scanner. Cynia was there too, still dedicated to her strike. On the one hand, it was a little shitty of her to just refuse to help and rely on the rest of them like that. On the other, what was the point in fighting her over it? They were in hell. She could burn whatever way suited her. Daffod had taken off at first light, telling Else something about the librarian and looking for other groups from Asian. If she thought about that, she'd leap forward, imagining Jellet waiting for them when they got back, and the disappointment when that didn't happen would hurt. So she didn't think about it, just drove the point of the crowbar into the crease around the dictionary's housing and put her weight behind it. "Almost," Kampar said. "There, good. That's a start. You want to take a turn?" "Happy to," the big man said. At the mouth of the alcove, Ricker's back went stiff. Hey, we have an issue here." The fear was a taste in her mouth. The murmur of the aliens, moving past in the cathedral-tall space they all shared, seemed to grow louder, sharper, more threatening. Jessen clenched her jaw and walked toward him. Truth was, she hated the open room of the cathedral. Under different circumstances, she might have loved it. She could imagine a child looking out at the same space, seeing the same alien bodies in their wild forest of variety, and being charmed, delighted. Diaphanous bulbs floated in the vaulted heights, flickering to each other like malefic fireflies. Black, crab-shaped animals scuttled together past a tall, lumbering thing that she didn't remember having seen before, with plates of greenish chitin all along its body. She hated it all. Ricker's gaze was as set and steady as a hunting dog. 15 strides into the shift and press of bodies, each on its own path, there was a stillness. 10 wide simian eyes turned toward the alcove, 5 small, murderous bodies covered in something halfway between hair and feathers. Jessen's throat went tight. Night drinkers, Daffod had called them. As a name a species called itself, it didn't make a lot of sense to Jessen. But who knew what those little black boxes that took chirps and clicks and rumbles and turned them into human speech were doing with idiom and metaphor? I take it that's them, Ricker said, his voice steady in a way that spoke of threat. She tried to speak, but it was too much. She nodded, and he saw her. Kampar shifted ahead of her, putting his body between her and the threat. This was what it must have been like, evolving up to human. Being part of a group, closing ranks together in the face of an enemy. She felt tears start to prick at her eyes, and hated that her anger was making her cry. She wanted to scream her rage, leap and attack the vicious little monkeys, not weep like she was still a little girl with a skinned knee.
All right, then, Kampar said. We knew they'd show back up. This is that, not a surprise.
Ricker moved next to Jessen, putting himself halfway behind Kampar's formidable bulk. He held his makeshift crowbar in a white-knuckle grip. They were all afraid, she said to herself. No reason for the self-loathing and shame she felt. She felt it anyway. Across the gap, one of the 5 feather monkeys ran wide, delicate fingers across its face and chittered to the others. She couldn't hear it, not really, and if she had, she wouldn't have known what it meant. Still, she was certain there were words in it. Then it looked at them and bared its teeth in something that Jessen anthropomorphized into a grin. Something shifted inside her fear. It was as fundamental and deep as a breaking bone. All the hatred she carried for herself seemed to slide away. Irina's presence in her memory still whipped her, but now it was whipping her toward something. Not just a punishment, but an instruction. The spiritual knife she'd carved herself with for as long as she could remember became a weapon looking for someone else's blood.
What, Jessen? Ricker said, trying to grab her arm and failing. What are you doing?
I have to tell them something, she said as she strode out among the alien bodies. She heard Kampar murmur an obscenity behind her. A large, deer-like thing with a green, sparking carapace moved in front of her in a cloud of musk, and when it had passed, she was closer to the little fuckers. Their 2 wide eyes went wider, and they jumped back, bouncing from spot to spot like they were on the edge of flight. One of them lifted a hand toward her and bared its little teeth again. Jessen grinned back at it.
Mine are bigger.
Ricker materialized at her shoulder. He had the crowbar gripped in his right hand and a jagged length of something transparent in the other, a shard from the berry's sample case. He held it like a knife. The feather-haired monkeys chittered, bounding away.
Move pretty fast, don't they? Ricker said.
Jessen shrugged.
Humans are endurance hunters.
Behind her, Kampar was still talking to himself in a steady mutter. The constant chatter of the big room took the edges off the words, but it sounded like prayer. When she glanced over her shoulder, he was following along just behind. She wasn't sure if she was relieved that they'd stayed together or worried that they'd left the lab unguarded. But the lab had been unguarded the whole time she'd been convalescing. The worst they could do was break it. The worst she could do to them was going to be much more dramatic than property damage. Ahead of them, the night drinkers scattered, bouncing between the legs and bodies of the other aliens like they were children playing find-me games. Jessen swung the crowbar back and forth. It had a fair amount of heft, enough mass to get some power behind it.
This is reckless,
Riker said.
It is, Jessen agreed. That's a symptom, isn't it, of the depression? Attempts at self-harm? Might be. But it's not me I'm thinking about harming right now. Kampar's voice broke in.
On the right.
Jessen's gaze cut to the right. One of the soft Lothark, the same as the guards and jailers from the ship, was in the process of ignoring the night drinker dancing in distress at its knees. The soft Lothark had one of the voice boxes, and it was chanting back the same squeaks and screeches as her prey. The night drinker looked at them, plucked at its own hands, and bounded away. Jessen didn't hurry, just changed the angle at which they were walking. She'd never been this far into the cathedral. There were alcoves all along the walls like the one they had crewed, and others too. High in the wall, a grid of machined holes let tiny bodies in and out of the tall air. Things with wings and balloon-wide bodies floated above those, shifting like living clouds that cast shadows on the throng below. Great arches of the same bronze and green metal that the holding cell had been constructed from rose up into the haze and light, foursquare and brutal, and not actually without their own rough kind of beauty. As huge as the place felt, it wasn't bigger than the campus square at Irvian. Or, if it was, this part wasn't. Jessen had walked farther than this every day in her old life, going from her rooms to a breakfast cafe, and then to the research labs. They felt like things she'd done in a particularly vivid dream. Something shrieked in the distance, a long, fluting howl that Jessen could have heard as distress or exultation. One of the Rakhund undulated into their path and then turned away. The little monkey scurried ahead, looking back at them every few steps with a growing sense of desperation. Jessen waved to it with her weapon, and Riker chuckled.
"What are we thinking we'll do if we catch them?" Kampar asked, "just to make sure we're all thinking the same thing."
"Play it by ear," Riker said. "We think we're going to play it by ear."
Hearing Riker respond as though this expedition were his idea, that he got to set the agenda, rankled a bit.
"You play it by ear. I'm getting some payback."
The night drinker fled, running on all fours, arms reaching out over legs, legs swinging down under arms. The three hunters kept pace, never rushing to catch up to it, and never losing sight of it for long. When it turned and bolted toward the wall, Jessen thought at first that it was trying to find some tunnel or passage too small for wide, angry human shoulders. The opening it jumped into was hardly bigger than a rabbit hole. If that had been its strategy, it would have worked. Riker slowed, his gaze shifting along the wall like he was reading it. The slow smile on his lips looked almost like wonder.
"Well now, would you look at that?"
She did. She'd been so focused on her little quarry that she hadn't taken in the whole picture. The wall here was stippled with holes, like the one it had gone into, but it wasn't the harsh metal that the rest of the architecture was forged from. It was grayish and soft-looking. Here and there, fungal rills ran along the mouths of the openings, and in the dark recesses, wide eyes looked out.
"Little bunny went home to mama," Kampar said.
"That was a mistake," Jessen said, then stepped forward and banged the crowbar against the ground. The impact made her fingers tingle.
"I know where you live," she shouted. "You have one of those little boxes? Make it tell you what I'm saying. I know where you fuckers live."
A gold-pelted night drinker appeared in one of the higher burrow holes, looking from Jessen to the others. Its weird V-shaped mouth made it seem somber and disapproving as a judge. Jessen shouted at it once, a harsh, wordless yawp, and then turned away. The elation and rage lasted almost two-thirds of the way back to their alcove. The darkness and fear that came in their place were as recognizable as her pillow. The rot. The joy and the sense of power had been an illusion, pretty paper wrapping around the same black center. "Well, that was bracing," Ricker said. He sounded slightly drunk. "Been a while since I walked that far. I'm surprised we did that."
"We had our war leader," Kumpar said.
His tone was light, but not joking. It was meant as a compliment, and she even felt it a little. "Those things are a 10-minute walk from our lab," she said. "That close, and we never saw them. We made our world too small."
"I think Tanner has been keeping our eyes more at our feet than the horizon," Kumpar said. "All of us except maybe young Alcor."
"The circumstances are unusual," Ricker said. It was so strange to see him defending Tanner, like watching a cat walk backward. The alcove was as they'd left it. The mess, the shards, the crack they'd managed to open beside the dictionary's screen. Jessen looked at it all, everything they still had to do, everything that was arrayed against them, and it was like she was gearing herself up to swim across an ocean, which was the same as preparing to drown. Kumpar lifted the crowbar from her fist. "Take a turn as lookout, maybe? Catch your breath. Unless we should retire to our quarters and come back later." "No, I'm fine," Jessen said, but not with enough strength to convince him. Ricker chuckled. "I think we need to get Jessen here back on her meds before she starts a war." He was smiling when he said it. He even sounded happy. It still felt like an accusation. "Fuck you back on my meds," she said. Ricker looked chagrined, and she felt a mean little thrill at his discomfort. To Kumpar, she said, "I'm all right." Kumpar put a hand on her shoulder. "You were magnificent. I'll follow you into battle any time, little sister." "Fuck," Jessen said, wiping at the sudden embarrassing tears. "Fuck you both." "We love you too," Kumpar said. Tentatively, he put his arm around her shoulder. When she leaned her head against his side, he relaxed into her, too. He was a big man, tall and broad as a boat. He seemed as massive and unbreakable as an ancient oak. And she remembered him weeping and gasping for air on their kitchen floor. She put her own arm around his waist and squeezed him tight. "It'll be all right," he said.
"It won't."
"No, but we'll find a way to be all right with that." They stood together for a long moment. If she closed her eyes, she could almost imagine they were on Ajian, at the end of a long day's work or some late-night event that had left her drained to the point of illness. Except it would have been Jellet instead of Kumpar, and she'd have felt guilty about keeping her brother from going out with his friends. Instead, she felt guilty about trying to drag her friends into a fight with murderous aliens just because